What do you do when your very good friend has a partner that you just don't click with, no matter the effort you put in? You've done the coffee dates, the birthday parties, the awkward prolonged silences when your friend leaves the room, leaving the two of you agonizingly alone. Maybe it's the fact that, besides your friend, you've got nothing in common. Or you think they don't have enough going on to keep your friend happy. Or there could even be another concern at play here. So how do you broach your concerns without ruining your friendship? Elizabeth Shaw is a clinical psychologist and clinical director at Relationships Australia, New South Wales. Elizabeth, hello.
Hi, Beverly.
So this is a scenario I think that everyone can relate to, right? Have you been in this situation yourself?
Absolutely, I have. And I imagine everybody, as you say, has had a moment like this.
How did you deal with it in your personal life with your psychology experience?
Well, look, I guess there's if you look at the experience on a continuum, there's the end, the sort of more benign end where you just don't click, as you've described, down to the other end where you're deeply concerned. So in the benign space, I think you've really got some questions to ask about whether you raise it at all, because if you call it out, it's one of those things that once it's out, you can't put it back in the box, and so I think at that end, it's more reflects our own position, which is what am I going to do with the fact that I don't click with this person, and it may affect the amount of times I want to hang out with them as a couple, and can that be accommodated within still a very good friendship? For example, if your friend still loves private catch-ups, then you can ask yourself, well, does it really need to matter? As long as I get my friend to myself and we can go on with our lovely friendship, that's fine. And then when you're out as a couple, to kind of embellish that moment by, say, going to the theatre or something where you don't have to talk too much, where you can have experiences, so you kind of pad it out. So you can always talk about the thing you saw. You know, that creates a conversation without it having to get into, you know, deepening your knowledge of the person, which you may not want to do. So I think down that end of things, it's about management, because I think if you ask more about, gee, why did you choose them?
That's
not going to go well.
Catch-ups after that, if you ask that question. But
that
sounds
right.
A lot like mental labor, managing the having to organize social gatherings and I guess regulate quite strongly the types of conversations that you're going to have. That will eventually take a toll on the friendship, don't you think?
Well, look, not necessarily, because it's part of living our lives generally. I mean, we're in work teams and we've got neighbours and, you know, we're always crossing paths with people who are not a perfect fit. And so, you know, this is a skill we have to develop in life. We might have to hang out with people all the time at work, which, you know, socially it's not our favourite moment, but we manage it. So I think we do manage it. And if you've got deep affection for your friend, one way to soften it is to keep saying, you know, well, what is it my friend sees in this person and how can I enjoy it for them? And you put in the labour because your friendship means a lot to you. I don't think that has to be a lot of hard work. It's just part of the life skills that we have to develop.
How about trying to get to know the partner on a one-on-one level? Do you ever think that is a good way to go?
Well, it can if you think there is more to them. You know that there is and you just haven't accessed it. So if, for example, your hypothesis is they're shy or they're a bit of a formal person, or you hear that they've got hidden depths and you're not sure about that.
I've heard about it,
then,
just haven't seen it. Yeah.
Well, look, that's right. Then perhaps doing that. But at the same time, in the fullness of time and the longer term relationship with your friend, there's going to be moments where you get some time alone without having to really formally engineer it. I mean, you don't want to over-function. And, you know, I imagine there's going to be the parties or whatever where you're standing alone together and you can, in fact, push a little more. But keeping it light might be one way to make sure that the relationship stays successful.
I'm going to bring in Dr. Lisa Williams now. She's a senior lecturer at the University of New South Wales School of Psychology. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
So, Lisa, when it comes to this kind of thing, do we sometimes need to look inside ourselves as to why we actually dislike somebody?
Yeah, so I guess one perspective to add here is that one emotion that can arise in situations like this is jealousy. And really, we often think about jealousy in terms of romantic relationships. So maybe you're jealous of your own partner's kind of new friendship, but it can actually work the other way. So jealousy is commonly thought, at least amongst academics, to arise when you have a relationship that you value that's actually being threatened. And so this situation, if you have a friendship that you really value, and this person has found a new source of social connection, that can actually represent a threat to the relationship that you have with that person. And so if you recognize that that may be what's driving your dislike towards this person, which is you actually feel like your friendship is threatened, then that becomes another route that you can use to kind of tackle the situation. Recognizing that emotion then makes it that you may not actually dislike this person. It's just that you feel like maybe you need to shore up your friendship a bit more.
So how, if you start to feel these twinges of jealousy, and that can be a pretty hard look at yourself to admit that you have these, you know, uglier feelings, I guess. How do you approach mitigating that?
It's a great question. I think the first biggest step is to recognize that that's going on. Because once you recognize that's going on, then really what's at play is that you have recognized that you truly value your friendship with this person. And the next step might be to find ways to invest more in that friendship, to demonstrate that you really care about this person. And out of that might follow an even stronger relationship.
Elizabeth, I would imagine that there are some mothers and fathers and family members listening to this thinking, I have these feelings about the new partner of my son or daughter. And I guess it's a little bit different because one would think that perhaps the family relationship means that the ties are more binding there. Are there things that family members should be mindful of as well as they try to test drive this new partner, I guess?
Well, look, I think the dynamics can be very similar, except, of course, in families, you really might be facing them on a much more regular basis than with a friend. So I guess that is the sort of the mini crisis that happens, that you suddenly think it's not just that, I need to get to know this person who's not my favourite person, but I actually have to bring them into my close social circle. Like I have to have them at family dinners every week or at all the festival dinners or whatever it might be. And there are some real questions. I think Lisa's point is incredibly important, which is to look at what is the threat, and that is always the other side of it, is what is it that bothers me? And those primitive fears, sometimes it is that I've lost my special place with my daughter, my friend, whoever it might be, but it also might be a real fear that their affection for each other will necessarily mean a loss for us. And in fact, if we don't get on with someone, they're very aware and don't get on with us either. You know, it can be one-sided, but often everybody is picking this up.
That's a very good point to make. So what do you do then? I mean, from the partner's perspective, we don't know. We're looking at this from the perspective of the friendship, yeah. But there could be all sorts of tensions going on inside that relationship as a result of the not getting along with a good friend.
Look, that's right. That's right. And it is very complicated. I think, first of all, trying to just, as Lisa says, to look at your own part in the reaction. I think, secondly, to look at what is it that this person seems to mean to my loved one, you know, my friend, my daughter, my parent who's remarried, you know, what does it say about them? Because sometimes we wonder why they haven't picked someone who's kind of like us. Like, we understand our relationship with them and think, oh, well, they'd choose someone else who's got our qualities. We'll all get on famously, all mirroring each other. But in fact, sometimes they've chosen someone who reflects other aspects of their personality or their need that is not obvious to us. And so I think spending a bit of time being curious and saying, oh, I wonder what this is about. I wonder what this connection's about that seems so valuable. That not only softens our perspective, but it also helps us feel perhaps warm towards our loved one, to say, okay, I get that part of them. I get that that's their need, and I can maybe be generous or give room to that. Those are just different different ways to be with the feelings. But as I said earlier, I think what's important is your judgment about when you call it out. Because if you are concerned, then that's a special case. You might need to find a way to bring it up. But if you feel, just more that you don't have a good fit, then I think talking to your loved one and maybe saying, look, I'm not sure that I'm connecting as well as I could, or I'd like to understand more about why they're important to you, because maybe I'm not on the same wavelength. Can you tell me more about it? What are you enjoying about this relationship?
Yeah, we've got a text coming in from Jody talking about that, about self-reflection. She says, if you don't like a friend's partner, then that should be your problem. But she takes it further here, and I think we should talk about this soon. If the partner is abusive to your friend and that's your concern, then say something. But as Carl Jung said, if there is something we don't like about it, like about each other, we should first examine it and see if it is something that we don't like about ourselves. Yeah. A little bit of self-reflections, it would be a good place to start, says Jody. And I'm Beverly Wang on Life Matters, talking to Elizabeth Shaw, a clinical psychologist and clinical director at Relationships Australia, New South Wales, as well as Dr. Lisa Williams with the University of New South Wales School of Psychology. So there's a bit in that text that I think we should talk about. But I also wanted to ask about, does it sometimes when you don't get along with your friend's partner and it's a good friend, is it kind of triggering like an existential crisis a little bit? Like, I get along with this person so well, we are like platonic soulmates. How can someone who is such a reflection of me choose so poorly in my opinion? They've made it about themselves there, obviously. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, so I can jump in there, I guess, a little bit and really echoing what Elizabeth has said about perspective taking, excuse me, that we fundamentally carry a bias around the world, seeing the world as we do through our own eyes. And I think if we presume that our closest friend shares that same lens of looking at the world, then it is this apparently problematic thing that we don't agree on what would appear to be a really big decision in our lives, which is who to spend our time with romantically. But I think that there is, if you overcome that bias, if you recognize that, and maybe even examine your own romantic partner relationships, is of course you have access to a much richer history of interactions with the person, and you know them better, and you feel like they resonate with your needs. Well, it would be easy to see how someone just looking in from the outside may not see that full range. So kind of recognizing, really examining what's going on within your own relationships and how that's panning out, and adopting those different shoes, looking at it through different lenses, may just kind of shed light on what's going on there.
That's some good advice. I do want to cover the continuum of behavior, which is of the concerning end, which is if you start to see signs in your partner or your friend's partner of controlling behavior or possibly even abuse or violence. I mean, how do you approach that without alienating your friend at a very vulnerable time? Elizabeth.
Well, look, I think there is something very important, that a role that we have to play with friends. And if you can disentangle the personal reaction you might have, you know, because you don't want to sort of load that into it. I think if you do see something, I remember a friend who I had a long-standing friend interstate, and I went to visit, so I didn't see her regularly, and her partner spoke to her in an incredibly rude and minimising, very sort of cutting way in front of me, and because we were such long-standing friends, I was able to say to her, look, you know how much I love you, and I'm probably biased, I just sort of started off soft around it, and I don't know him well, but gee, that seemed harsh. What was that like for you? And fortunately she was able to say, well, he does that all the time, and so that we could have left that there. We could have dismissed it as, oh, okay, it's an everyday matter, we'll put that to a domestic sort of thing. But it was an opening for me to say, well, that isn't okay. You know, you're an important person and you're worth more. What's going on? I think as friends and as family, it's crucial, particularly for, say, in the case of women in abusive relationships, it's the silence around it where people cringe and think, oh, gee, that's embarrassing, or that's awful, or yuck, and turn away rather than turn towards, that we let each other down. So I think to come to people with concern is absolutely crucial, because even if your friend shuts it down and wants to dismiss it, what you've done is you've given them a chance to reflect. You have said, well, look, from another perspective, this is how it looks.
Mm.
That could be real food for thought that's going to be crucial for your friend.
Absolutely true that, Tom, when you're seeing these signs of abuse, then those are the crucial times where you do have to stay connected and not isolate your friends. I want to thank you both for your insights. Elizabeth Shaw is a clinical psychologist and clinical director at Relationships Australia, New South Wales. And Dr. Lisa Williams is with the University of New South Wales School of Psychology.